Happy Friday morning to all. We are back here in the RMU radio room on another Friday. Time right now is 9:31. We got the show in. And it is the second show of the year. I think it might be the 19th show total. I honestly cannot remember. I tried to keep track multiple different occasions.
We'll just stick with the season 2, episode 2.
Yeah, I think that's a very good thing to do. But welcome in on this Friday morning, second show of the year, as we mentioned. We'll go around the horn. I'm Austin Bechtold here with you.
And I'm Andrew Golvesh here with you.
And I'm Nathan Breisinger.
We're all keeping our notes ready to go as we start up today. And let's talk about first the Steelers. Steelers in Tennessee not playing this week because of the Titans' coronavirus cases that have been relayed into the NFL media department. And we're basically seeing now that players continue to get tested positive as of Tuesday. So the NFL is saying, after saying potentially the game would move back to Monday night and telling the officials at one point that the game will be on Monday night, the possibility of playing on Tuesday night football, which I'm not sure if that has ever happened before, Steelers will not play this week at all against Tennessee, and it's really no fault to themselves. When another team, and we don't know if they broke protocols or anything that the NFL has put in place that, for the reason that they were able to contract the virus. But what is very disappointing and frustrating is that the Steelers run so far, which, I mean, it's obviously brief into the season, and that the Minnesota Vikings, which, who knows, they had no tests, they had no tests that came back positive. But let's say that they did. And Minnesota is also affected by this. And Tennessee is the reason that all this started. And I don't know the news coming out of Tennessee. It could have been that players broke protocol. And we don't know that. We don't know the answer to that. Yeah. Hypothetically, if they did, no matter what happened, this is just a real gut check for the NFL.
Yeah, I agree. They were doing really well up to like this point. I mean, 3 weeks in, there was one or two positive COVID tests. I don't have the exact numbers, but there weren't many.
Yeah, and Tennessee added cornerback Christian Fulton to that list not too long ago too.
Yeah, it's not a good look. But I do like the call to not play the game. Me and Austin were talking about this whenever it first broke. I thought it was the right thing to do. I mean, just to play it safe, because the NFL is such a big company that if a whole bunch of other players and teams will start to get it, the NFL would lose a lot of money and it would just not be very good.
Yeah, and I think this can affect, you know, sort of the image of the league just a little bit, because we saw a couple months ago when the MLB was back and they were having issues of containing the virus within organizations, especially Miami, where they had a ton of players come down with it, and then there was cancellations for a while, for a couple weeks, where there was just several teams that weren't playing. And you just don't want that happening in the NFL. So it's good that they canceled it, and hopefully they can straighten things out, and the players that have it are going to sit out and won't be around the team for a while. But it's concerning to know that people had come down with it, to know, you know, how harsh are these protocols in keeping these players safe? Because also eventually, I mean, especially for the NFL, you want to let fans back in the stadium, because for every league so far, NFL, MLB, NHL, and NBA, they're losing out so much money by not having fans in the stands. And if there's going to be a continual, you know, players coming down with the virus, we're not going to, you know, continue to grow the capacity within the stands.
No, and I think obviously that the decision was correct by the NFL to cancel the game. Now, I say that because that there were more tests confirmed in the last, you know, last day or two. Now, if it was just Monday and even Tuesday that it was announced that there were tests and that players were coming back positive, I'm all for why do you even have the extra practice squad roster positions if you're not going to use them in the event of players having the virus? I don't understand that. But whenever there's more positive cases that come, the closer that you get to the game, I get it from that standpoint. If it was Tuesday, I would have still... If the last case was reported on Tuesday, which now it wasn't, I would have still thought play the game Monday, because I think, you know, these things change so rapidly, and I don't understand the idea of, okay, this has all gone down on a Tuesday. Let's continue to test people throughout the week, but let's not just have the game. I don't know why you can't take it one day at a time. Why does one conclusion have to be made to cancel that week's game before when you're 5 days out?
I have no idea. I kind of like the idea that you were going, as if like they should have kept testing every day. And if you have,
well, they will keep testing every day.
Well, they will keep testing every day, but like at least give it another day or two if there were more positive cases. And as you said, I like the practice squad idea. I mean, it wouldn't be very fair to the Titans, but they shouldn't have broke protocol, whatever they did, to contract the virus.
Yeah, and we're not trying to say that they did break protocol. We don't know, but the possibility is out there.
It's high
since just. All of a sudden, a bunch of players came down with it.
It was really, really out of the blue. I mean,
yeah, no other teams have been affected whatsoever yet.
Yeah, I mean, through the first couple of weeks, it's been going pretty smoothly.
One or two players here and there. Yeah, the one I do know about is cornerback AJ Terrell for the Atlanta Falcons. He was out last week due to being put on the COVID list. But other than that, I don't know of many.
So Cam Hayward and Eric Ebron were voicing their frustrations yesterday on Twitter, basically saying that why right now are we getting this decision? Kind of saying we're halfway through the work week. You're deciding to cancel the game. Now you're giving us a technical bye week, I guess, is what they're trying to say. And the bye week included 2 days of practices. It's not a real bye week. So what do you guys make of that? Do you think that it is a real bye week? I don't. I don't think that I think that the Steelers, with somewhat of a kind of a younger roster now. I mean, obviously you have your veterans like Ben and Pouncey, and you know, the offensive line is relatively older. But for the most part, a lot of the stars, all the wide receivers, all the linebackers, they're all young guys. The whole secondary, other than Joe Hayden. But I just feel like not having a true bye week, I don't think it's going to affect as much as people think. And the Steelers have gone to the Super Bowl two occasions when having a week four bye. I think that it's going to be difficult, obviously. But I think that every team, every great team that's on the road to greatness and that does something special every year – goes through some sort of adversity.
Yeah,
the Chiefs lost Patrick Mahomes for a couple games last year. New England, well, they're New England. But the Philadelphia Eagles lost Carson Wentz. Now Nick Foles is out there leading the charge. Every team that usually wins the Super Bowl goes through some sort of adversity, and this could be the Steelers.
Yeah, you work through the circumstances that are given to you, and I mean the Steelers here, you know, are dealing with not having a bye later in the season. And I do think that it might affect the Steelers a little bit more than you think, Austin, just because, you know, Ben's up there in age. And also, I think our O-line...
Ben didn't play last year. You got to remember that. It's not like, you know, he's got the wear and tear of all of last season.
Yeah, but also, if he gets bumped and bruised, we've seen it before. He gets bumped and bruised, he's out for a couple games. It's been pretty consistent over the past 5 years where, you know, an ankle injury is nagging him or an arm injury now with his season last year. But I think the O-line and D-line, especially like Cam Hayward, guys like that, DeCastro, older guys, I think it might affect especially some of the bigger guys.
But, yeah, I kind of agree with what Austin was saying because, you do have those core pieces like Ben, the line, and all that stuff, but the key pieces of that defense, which is the key to this team's success kind of still, is relatively young with Minka, Watt, Bud, Devin Bush, Steven Nelson.
You're gonna say J.J. Watt. We don't have him yet. We're gonna probably trade for him at the trade deadline.
I was thinking about J.J. Nelson because I had him in fantasy a couple years ago. But no. But I think this defense is relatively young, and I think they're up for the task to play whatever it would be. Would it be 13 straight games after this week?
I'm just contemplating why you had J.J. Nelson on your fantasy team.
It was not a very
he's
good.
A kicker. He's just a kicker turner. I mean, he's a great kicker turner, but
he had points for me like one time, and then I picked him up.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Anybody else's thoughts on the Steelers as we wrap up the segment? Anybody else think that next week against the 0-2-1 Goldberg Philadelphia Eagles?
That we won't have a problem with that. The Steelers DBs are gonna shut down the practice squad receivers of the Eagles.
Well, I think also this week with the cancellation, it's a disadvantage for the Steelers because they start off 3-0. They have the momentum. Yeah, I mean, the three wins that they have, except for the Texans, were against two teams, the Giants.
All three of those teams are now 0-9.
Yeah, so I'm
combined.
I saw CBS posted that graphic.
They're teams that are sort of sitting at the bottom of their divisions, but the Titans were gonna be a good matchup. I mean, we saw them take down the Patriots last year. Derrick Henry would have been definitely an interesting matchup with the Steelers' defense. But I think it's a disadvantage that you don't see them early in the season to maybe put up a 4-0 start. And now, I mean, I'm sure you can go in and beat the Eagles and make it 4-0, but they're another team that's sort of like, well, who are these guys? Yeah, you're playing the practice squad receivers, and Carson Wentz can't make a throw. So,
well, I'm going to defend Carson Wentz on this one. I mean, he's had no one to throw the ball for the past 2 years. He's been trying to carry this team on his back, and he's just trying to do too much, in my opinion. He's trying to literally put this team on his back, and he just can't do it. Football's a team game.
They had like one healthy wide receiver at practice a couple of days ago, and it was Greg Ward, who was a quarterback in college.
Who are these dudes? And like, he's got to work with that. I mean, it's a far cry from what he had when he had Alshon Jeffrey and all those guys. None of them are healthy. Even their rookie Jalen Reagor, who's out. I mean, like the one dude who's supposed to come in and save them goes.
Yeah, they
and
can't
gets
catch
hurt.
A break.
They just can't. That team can't catch a break.
Poor Goldberg.
Poor Goldberg.
Our buddy Goldberg, big Eagles fan.
Big Eagles.
Bad season so far for Philadelphia.
Also pretty big Flyers fan, but.
Yeah. Haven't won the Cup since 1975, but you know. You know who did win the Stanley Cup?
Who?
The Tampa Bay Lightning won it. Golvash, why don't you take it away and tell us how they did it?
It was a 2-0 game, and the game, I didn't watch the highlights of the game, but
Ooh.
It was, I know.
All right, let's toss it to Nate then.
But I do remember the game winner was scored off a knockdown by Big Rig himself, Pat Maroon, feeding over to Blake Coleman for a one-timer to seal the deal and secure Steven Stamkos his first Stanley Cup, Nate.
Yeah, that was such a nice goal, you know, on the feed over to Blake Coleman. Blake Coleman made no mistake burying it. But the Lightning surprisingly come into this game and put up more of a defensive performance where, yeah, they're solid defensively, but you see this team putting up 3 to 4 goals a game. And they were able to squeak by. I mean, it's your typical playoff-type hockey. You score 2 goals to win a game, and they were able to do it here. Andre Vasilevskiy was phenomenal throughout this postseason and backstopping this team to a Stanley Cup, their first one since 2004. It's been a long time coming for this team. I know 2004 seems like not too long ago in terms of championships with teams who have had droughts for longer than that, but this team has been so good throughout this decade that it just finally all clicked together this year. And the Tampa Bay Lightning organization pressed all the right buttons and bringing the guys they have brought in, you know, trading for people like Blake Coleman and Barkley Goudreau during the deadline. And they brought in the right pieces, and it finally molded together after, you know, what easily, arguably was the best NHL season by any team last year, putting up 128 points for the Lightning. And then going on to be swept by the Columbus Blue Jackets in the first round. So, you know, they're the bounce-back kids, you know, the revenge tour after getting swept like that, which was embarrassing. Mm-hmm. Sort of like, you know, a lot of people are now bringing up the Virginia
the
Cavaliers.
Yeah, that's what you said.
Yeah, I said it a while ago, and
you
I've actually
it a
seen,
ago,
I've seen
and
it.
You kind of stuck to it.
I've seen a lot of people now bringing that to
bring,
the table.
Bring the narrative in.
Because, you know, just everybody has been speaking on that terms of they're the Cavaliers of this year, and they are. I mean, you know, coming back from an abysmal postseason last year where they were expected to make a deep playoff run, and they have been expected to make deep playoff runs year in and year out because the team they've built, especially with Stamkos, and yet they come in this year and win everything without Stamkos.
So then who's UMBC? The Flyers? University of Baltimore? That beat the Virginia Cavaliers? No one remembers who beat Virginia?
I knew it was UMBC.
What are you trying to make this?
I'm trying to say that.
What are you trying to connect the dots here?
Who is the UMBC in the NHL then?
It would have been Columbus.
It would have been the Columbus Blue Jackets. But yeah, as you said, 2004 doesn't really feel like a long time. But you look, I mean, they got beaten in the Cup Finals by the Blackhawks. They were one game away from being there, but the Penguins beat them. And then every year they get into the playoffs, but they can never quite seem to get over that hump. And now they finally get that cup that they desired, with the Conn Smythe going to Victor Hedman, of course, who I believe who broke an NHL record for goals by a defenseman with what he didn't break it?
No, he was third on that list.
He was third.
He scored 10 and was behind Paul Coffey with 12 and Brian Leetch with 11.
Okay,
goals.
But still a remarkable postseason.
Yeah, unbelievable. To put up those numbers for a defenseman. I mean, that dude looked like he was a forward out there sometimes. He was up in the plays. He was getting shots left and right on the net, and they were just finding the back of the net. But, I mean, are you surprised that Hedman ended up walking away with the Conn Smythe?
I personally am. I thought...
Instead of Braden Point?
I thought Braden Point should have won it. Braden Point was
and
dominant.
Kucherov, and Valesky,
and Kucherov.
All people who could have been Canada's.
I mean, it's just a testament to how deep that team is. I mean, you see Hedman, like, there wasn't a clear-cut favorite to who was going to win it. I personally thought it was going to be Braden Point. Nate, you were talking to me about it. You thought it was going to be Hedman. But, I mean, it was just... It's just an unreal team, and I'm kind of happy they won, because I'm a Lightning fan at heart. Nate knows this too, and I'm.
Oh yeah, you are. Yeah, you're a Lightning fan at heart. As soon as they win the cup,
just like
Nate,
no,
Nate knows that's
just
not
like
true.
6 years ago, you picked the wrong time to wear your Lightning jersey whenever the Pens were about to play them. But I mean, it's good for Hedman, who, you know, the first defenseman to win the Conn Smythe since Duncan Keith in the 2015 mm-hmm. run. I mean, honestly, in reality, I did think Point would have won it, or Kucherov. But I think Hedman, I think the all-around play of the
Hedman
way
Hedman is what did it.
Yeah. I mean, he did his defensive approach, and then him, you know, being able to come up and score and provide offense for this team. And speaking of providing offense.
Steven Stamkos in 5 minutes scored a goal.
No Steven Stamkos all postseason. He comes in, might score maybe the biggest goal of the postseason, because he shows that he can step in and be a difference maker right away, and then he's out.
And then he's done. He said, all right, I'm going to head out.
He did that little Simpson meme where you walk in the door and you turn right back around.
You turn right back around. And I would also like to give a shout out to the play of Anton Hudobin and the Dallas Stars. No one expected them to be here. They fought hard.
You at the beginning of the season,
I said it. I said
preached heavily on the Stars about them bouncing back from their slow start, and then they change from to Rick Bowness. Coming in halfway through the year with, you know, their issues
with was it Montgomery?
Yeah, and his he checking himself into a rehab
facility.
Place for alcohol and just the adversity they sort of faced. And but I think this team they had their young guys, but it was really veteran led. You know, Radulov, Corey Perry, Joe Pavelski, Jamie Benn, Tyler Seguin was sort of invisible for a majority of the postseason, but this team was really veteran-led. Hudobin as well, and you know, a journeyman around the NHL. They surprised a lot of teams this year.
I mean, they surprised a lot of teams, but they surely didn't surprise me. I knew what this team was capable of. I mean, of course, it was a bunch of older guys, but I mean, if you look at the resumes of those dudes, those are straight playoff warriors. And Perry, and Pavelski. I mean, Tyler Seguin, who's won a cup. Ben, a true grit and grind type of guy. And then another thing I was sold on was their defense, because those defensemen, as you said, they kind of, all of them play like Hedman. They're all kind of like
they jump up in
they're all willing to jump up into the play.
Heiskanen.
And then you got the stalwarts of Lindell, Oleksiak, and then you had the key roles of Kiviranta and I think is Joel Hanley. I mean, who are these dudes? And they're coming out and they're playing great hockey.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there can be a lot of similarities between the Stars and the Blues last year. Because the Blues
I told my dad that. I said, this team gives me Blues vibes.
I mean, the only big difference I see between those teams is the goaltending. Because Binnington comes in as a rookie and wins the cup. But Hudobin, you know, 34 years old.
Hudobin was unreal.
Was able to lead this team. You know, and it's surprising because Ben Bishop's, you know, their backup, and for years he was one of the better goalies in the league.
So he still is, in my opinion. I don't know. I mean, of course, yeah, of course you ride the hot hand.
Yeah, he can be a number one goalie on a lot of teams, and it's surprising because you see that from a lot of teams that make their deep postseason run. You see it with the Penguins between Murray and Fleury. You know, not the Lightning, not so much. But the Blues last year, they had Binnington for, you know, they could have stuck with, but they also had Jake Allen, who was a reliable backup.
Exactly. And then the thing was, like, Khudobin probably would have been an afterthought, but Ben Bishop is deemed unfit to play at the beginning, so they have to throw Khudobin in, and he just, I don't even know what it was. He summoned dark arts or magic or something. He mastered the dark arts or something, but he turned into a god. He was unstoppable. He kept Dallas. He won Dallas games.
Well, that's one way to put it.
Yeah, but you got to give a lot of credit for both these teams. Sort of.
It was honestly a good series.
It was a good matchup because you see two teams that, I mean, the Lightning were in it a few years back, but the Stars haven't been
there since the 2000s.
Since 1999.
99, 2000s.
And they won that cup beating the Sabres, but. A lot of credit to both these teams. John Cooper, you know, remarkable job done by him. But then how about instead of a typical street parade, what about the river parade?
The river parade.
The boat parade down in Tampa. That looks awesome.
Only in Florida.
Hey, it's honestly one of the safer ways to, I guess, social distance, especially if you're not allowed to have a parade. But pretty cool. Maybe that's going to become a new norm. I mean, Pittsburgh could have done it.
Yeah, we'll have the river parade.
Blackhawks could have done it.
Steelers.
Everybody.
A lot of the teams can do it because, you know, having rivers run or waterways run through the heart of their cities. So I think that was a really cool thing, and you see Pat Maroon partying it up. Back-to-back cups for two different teams.
I mean, that just shows you, like, the dude is the kind of player that you need to win. He's a grit and grind guy. He'll never be too flashy, but when there's a clutch moment or, like, a key moment in the game, he's always kind of a part of it because, as I said, I mean, he knocks down that pass to seal the deal in game six with the pass to Coleman. And then to send the Blues past Dallas, I don't know if you remember that, Patrick Mahomes putting the dagger in the hearts for Dallas
yeah,
2 years in a row.
Overtime.
I hate to cut the hockey, but there's breaking news. Golvash, our breaking news sound?
I forget. I don't know.
That's Sports Center.
No, that's Sports Center.
What was it?
It's more like Adam Schefter. Adam Schefter tweeting, two more Tennessee Titans players have tested positive today for coronavirus. Well, if the game wasn't canceled a couple days ago, it definitely would be canceled now. So,
all right, then. So that just puts us to bed.
Puts that to rest. Two more Titans players coming down with coronavirus. That's a total of, I believe, 9 now. What
the hell's going down in Tennessee?
Yeah, Tennessee. I don't know what's going on there, but a couple more cases of coronavirus there in the Titans. Who knows what their future's looking like now? It's not looking great for potentially even next week.
As long as it's not Derrick Henry or Ryan Tannehill, they'll be fine.
It just depends on the protocols. Like, is the NFL going to play? Is a team like Tennessee, are they going to have to sit out until those players that tested positive come back negative? Like, what is the NFL has not really been clear to a lot of us about. What happens when someone contracts the virus? Where do they go?
I hope their plan was to hope that no one got it. I pray to God that isn't their plan.
I don't know. It was just inevitable that eventually someone would get it, that there would be an outbreak. So it just seems like there's not enough clarity here. I don't know. Nothing has really been relayed as to what's going to happen in terms of, okay, those players are put on the COVID list, but now where do they go? Can you still play? When are they going to reopen practice facilities? It's just a mess. Maybe they should have went with a bubble idea, like the NBA. Finals.
I mean, there is a whole lot more people on football teams than NBA teams. I mean, I don't know where everybody would go.
Right. I don't think
you'd have to make a massive one, a couple of them.
Right.
It's worked in the NBA, so.
Well, yeah, I don't think the NFL bubble would be able to work because of the size of rosters, but the NBA bubble's working, and they're currently.
The NBA bubble was super effective.
They're currently in the finals. The Lakers, the Lake Show, L.A. Braun up 1-0 on the Miami Heat, his former team. LeBron in his 10th finals of all time, looking for his fourth ring. And they're currently up 1-0. Everybody on the Heat looks to be injured. Game 2 is tonight. L.A. Braun, how do you think he does, Golvash?
I think he's as dominant as ever, as he always is in the finals. I mean, LeBron always seems to ball it, and he's got his sidekick AD with him. And I just feel so bad for the Heat. They fight so hard to get all the way here and then just get completely derailed by injuries. Goran Dragic with the plantar tear. And I believe Bam, I don't know if it was a back injury of some sort, but he's they're both looking doubtful.
Yeah, and even
two key parts of their team are just out.
Even with everyone healthy, I mean,
it wasn't much.
You know, you want to ride the Heat train, but I mean, the Lakers are just too big, too physical. You know, they come driving into the paint. I mean, I don't really know if the Heat have an answer for LeBron and AD, Dwight Howard, JaVale McGee.
I mean, Bam was really going to be their only answer for any big men they had to bring up against him. And now that he's out, I mean, who are you going to rely on? Kelly Olynyk?
I mean, Dwight's playing well.
Dwight Howard is playing phenomenal. We're getting 2010, 2009 Dwight.
You're getting some vintage Dwight Howard and LeBron James in these finals, and that's what you'd love to see.
You're definitely not getting 2009 Dwight Howard, but he's definitely been on a different level than he was in his days in Charlotte. In Atlanta.
Austin is indeed a Charlotte fan, so he knows all too well about the Dwight Howard.
Yeah, I know about the Dwight.
I didn't think he was that. He averaged a double-double.
The Dwight Howard Charlotte experience was like 12 points and 10 rebounds, which was fine. But when you can't run him effectively in an offensive Kemba Walker, there's not much productivity that you're going to get in terms of the standings.
Exactly.
So I really do like this. I said it on our show, Sports Talking the Berg, on RMU-TV, that in my opinion, the Clippers, since the Clippers are done, it's all Lakers. It's all LeBron. And I believe I said Lakers, Heat, LeBron wins. I tweeted it out. Lakers in six before the series started, and I'm sticking to that. No doubt about it.
You still sticking to six?
I still think six. I think Jimmy Butler and the crew over there are gonna definitely get a game. I think it's
gonna be LeBron's gonna gentleman sweep the entire NBA. The Heat will take one game, and then it's just gonna go down in five games. The Heat, and then whatever happens from there, the Lakers will win out.
Yeah, it's hard not to go with the Lakers at this point. Just watching this game one performance, I mean, LeBron, AD, 34 points, LeBron, 25. These guys were dominant. There's no answer to these two. I mean, and also the Lakers just hit you in waves with, you know, the amount of talent they have with Kentavious Caldwell-Pope coming in, Danny Green, even Rajon Rondo being able to figure
playoff Rondo, and be
a playmaker. So they just have different guys, and I think, you know, collectively as a whole, the Heat just have a nice, solid roster, you know, and they have not really a star above the other. Jimmy Butler maybe stands out just a bit, but, you mean, Tyler Herro was figuring in, Goran Dragic, but now with some injuries, but
Goran Dragic now has a plantar tear in its foot. His return for the NBA Finals is questionable. The possibility remains that he will be able to play, but he's doubtful for Game 2.
I mean,
also doubtful is Bam Adebayo after an MRI revealed he has a neck strain. So if Goran Dragic and Bam don't play, that's two starters out for Miami. You throw Iguodala and Tyler Herro into the starting lineup, and you just have no depth on that bench.
Exactly.
You have Kendrick Nunn and Kelly Olynyk, and that's it.
You have no depth coming off the bench. And just those two players hurt your team entirely when they go down.
I mean, those are two key roles of the offense and on the defensive end, obviously, and Bam. But, like, man, it just sucks for a team that fought so hard to get all the way here and just be derailed.
I didn't think they really had
a shot at winning anyways, because, I mean, the Heat, they're up, what, 13 in the first quarter, and then the Lakers end up going on, I believe, a 75-35 run and just completely blowing them out of the
Lakers
water.
Outscored Miami 34-20 in the second quarter and 28-19 in the third quarter. Pretty good runs by LeBron and the Heat. And even when LeBron is not on the court,
they're still scoring.
They're still finding a way to score, which is the difference that
it's the waves
a lot
that
of LeBron have. Teams that, have had.
And that's exactly. I mean, as you said, you haven't seen a whole lot of teams be able to do that in previous finals. It's normally LeBron has to play like all 48 minutes of the game.
Right. It's LeBron and AD, and that's still kind of it. But the role players are just, they're filling in. KCP at 13, Danny Green at 11, Caruso at 10. It's just, I don't know. This team gels. This team gels pretty well.
Agreed.
And I think that's, you know, when I look at Boston, and they're so talented, I just don't know if that team really gels. Like, what is Gordon Hayward on the Celtics? How does Kemba fit? That is Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum's team. Where does Gordon Hayward, who when he was signed was going to be the best player on the Celtics Kyrie, yeah. not really a team guy.
Yeah. I mean,
Kyrie saying there's no real head coach in Brooklyn now. So that's nice.
I really like how Kemba fits on that team, though. I think Kemba's a nice little piece that they need. I mean, I know you're not too happy to hear that him, again, being a Charlotte's fan and all, but I do like how Kemba plays, and he'd be a good fit. But Gordon Hayward is the questionable one.
Yeah, I mean,
he's just a straight shell of what he used to be.
I mean, yeah, how can you even tell what he's supposed to be in that team whenever he's hurt all the time? I mean, he's just never out there because of
injuries. It's a shame because he's just a complete shell of what he was. For people who are just now picking up basketball, Gordon Hayward was unbelievable in Utah. Single-handedly was carrying them on that team, and it was a shame to see him go down and just be a shell of what he was.
Yeah, it is a shame. I also want to touch on what you think is going on with the Clippers. So they fired Doc Rivers, which honestly was a surprise to me. They have Paul George, who was awful. And awful is an understatement in the playoffs.
And mocked by teammates when trying to give a speech.
Yeah, that wasn't great. That, you know, he's really lost the locker room more than Doc Rivers did. Kawhi disappeared in Game 7 against Denver. Denver put up a great fight, though. I want to recognize Denver. But what did the Clippers do? They had Sixth Man of the Year, Montrezl Harrell. They had Sixth Man of the Year, Lou Williams. Everybody they brought off their bench, they were the deepest team in the playoffs. They are probably the most talented team in the playoffs. And they fall short against a Denver team that comes back on them down 3-1.
Coaching. Simple as that.
Yeah, and you know, like, team that it happens to teams where sometimes you just can't control the locker room. But if you have championship aspirations and, you know, you're sort of bad-mouthing players like Paul George and you're having issues within your locker room, then, you know, it shows the true character of a team. And maybe they weren't, you know, the NBA-friendly team that we all thought they were going to be and coming in and win the championship with Kawhi and Paul George coming in. And, you know, does that also, you know, fall on the shoulders of Kawhi? Because he's a soft-spoken guy who doesn't really speak.
No doubt.
And trying to be a leader, yes, he leads by example. But does that lean on him about being, you know, a vocal leader, which maybe he needs to step up? Because if he wants to win a championship with this team, he might have
to. In the NBA, stars trump coaching. Okay, meaning it's the only sport that really is like this. It's really not there in you won't find it really in the NFL. Baseball, I guess.
Sometimes.
The only exception in the NFL would be Tom Brady with Belichick. A little bit.
A little bit.
He had a say in a lot of things.
Belichick, while he's leading New England right now.
The closest thing to that would probably be Aaron Rodgers and Matt LaFleur. Because Aaron Rodgers, majority can call the shots when he wants to. But.
Well, the point is that the stars dictate the game in the NBA more really than the coaches do. And you see that by Brad Stevens is a great coach in Boston, but he still can't win the East. And LeBron, every year, you probably can't even remember half the coaches LeBron had in Cleveland. And he's still getting to the NBA Finals. He's been to 10 finals with coaches like Ty Lue.
David Blatt.
Eric Spoelstra's a great coach. But he's really the exception. They're going right now with Frank Vogel. I mean, Frank Vogel is Vogel's fine.
He never got out of the second round.
He's not a guy that's considered a top tier, top of the line coach, and that's where just the talent outplays it. That's where I think you can blame Doc Rivers. You can blame the coaching in Philadelphia, where Doc Rivers now is the head coach.
5-year deal.
But in the end, the stars dictate the league in the NBA. And the more star players you have, that's why you see the super teams that came out of nowhere. Unless you're Greg Popovich, the stars dictate the league. Unless you're the San Antonio Spurs, the stars are the reason that you get as far as you do in the playoffs. And the fact that you have Montrezl Harrell, who's a Sixth Man of the Year, basically. Lou Williams is a Sixth Man of the Year. You had great play. You had Landry Shamet coming off your bench that can hit a good 3-and-D guy. You had a bunch of great players. You had Pat Beverly, a bunch of good role players that are better than the Lakers role players. Put that along with Kawhi, who we know how dominant and special that he is as a player when he wants to be. And he just didn't look like the Clippers didn't want to look like they wanted to be in the bubble from the beginning. And It was just evident when they were sleeping through game six and especially game seven of the Western semis, which just made no sense to me.
Agreed. And then back to, I want to talk about Nate, about Kawhi being a leader. I saw Nick Wright have a take on this. Kawhi, throughout his entire career, has never really asked to be that guy or leader. He didn't have to be that guy in San Antonio. He didn't have to be that guy in Toronto. And now he has to be the guy.
Yeah, but he
and made, and people are questioning, do you really think he has that in him?
He made the choice, you know, to sort of form his own little, you know, power team in LA with the Clippers. And yeah, going to Toronto, you already had leadership there with Kyle Lowry and, you know, other players on the roster. And like you said, he was kind of
mentored by Tim Duncan.
He was
in
the shadow back in San Antonio, but here he's older. He's older in the league. He's experienced. He's sort of a veteran moving up, and it's his time sort of to take leadership. Yeah, I mean, it's just like you don't have to be an extremely vocal leader, but you just need to take control of, you know, the issues you have going on. And if you're gonna be a team, like I said, if you have championship aspirations, you have to figure that out, and I think Kawhi Leonard, a lot of it relies on him. And I think, you know, I know it's his personality where he's not very, you know, talkative, and a guy that, you know, can step up and do stuff like that, but I think it's time that if he wants to win more championships, he needs to find control of this locker room, and this team definitely could have won this year. Besides, you know, it would have been a great matchup to see them and the Lakers, but you know, they didn't.
We'll never know until next year.
We're not knowing what's going to happen until next year. The Pirates and the number one draft pick. We all speculate it's Kumar Rocker. The Pirates have clinched. Where Austin was wrong, the Pirates did get the number one pick.
Where Andrew was right.
Where Austin was right, Pitt and the Steelers won, where you guys predicted that they wouldn't. But they did win. But back to the Pirates. Kumar Rocker, is he coming home? Great possibility. O'Neal Cruz, will he come back to the United States? Also a great possibility, where it looks like that it's going to be ruled an accident in the Dominican Republic.
Really?
So, currently right now, the state of affairs for the Pirates is going up. On the field, it's trending in the right direction. It's really sad, the story that's going on with O'Neal Cruz, just the whole developments that are coming out of it, that the motorcycle that was struck had no lights on. I've heard that it was even driving in the other lane. I don't know if I can confirm that or not, but that's just one thing that I was told. And O'Neal Cruz was driving to the hospital to drive. He was driving his girlfriend to the hospital because she was having complications with their child. And the whole story, the more and more you learn,
the more and more you feel bad for the dude.
Yeah, and the more it looks like an accident. And you feel for the people that died. But originally, everybody was condemning O'Neal Cruz as...
Everybody was ready
to throw him in jail for the rest of his life. And the more facts that come out, the more it shows that it was an accident.
And
that's what Ben Cherington has stated. They have all implications are pointing to O'Neal Cruz being a full participant in 2021 spring training.
And here's the thing. When it comes to social media and, you know, the media itself... It gets blown out of proportion. I think people take it too far, too early. Because the perfect prime example was the Kobe Bryant incident. People were trying to make speculations and didn't know the
facts.
That's
a good comparison.
And here you have O'Neal Cruz, didn't necessarily know the facts. Yes, there were things released about him having, you know, alcohol in his system. But, you know, it's nice to see finally that there are things that are coming out that are showing that it's, you know, there was actually different circumstances that were going on, and to see that he might finally be okay in terms of what happened and not see any jail time, you know, which is good for the Pirates, but, you know, you're still having this image and this publicity, this negative publicity that surrounds this team is still, you know, not good for the worst team in baseball. I mean, the only thing you can celebrate is getting that first overall pick.
And that, as you said, I mean, the last week we were all talking about how much of an idiot O'Neal Cruz was.
Exactly.
Because, I mean, when it first dropped, all the details were is that, I mean, as I said, he crashed into somebody, three people are dead. He's probably going to jail and we lose the top prospect. But as you said, more investigations were done. People looked into it more. And now O'Neal's, hopefully his name could be cleared and we can hopefully have him in 2021.
Yeah, it's definitely a sad situation regardless of how
you look at it.
And I just feel like, you know, if Cruz is able to come and return, then the Pirates are in good shape in terms of prospects going forward, with Cabrian Hayes looking like a dominant all-star gold glove guy for the next 10, 15 years. He's your anchor. He's your best player. He's your new leader like McCutchen was. You know, that's what I see when I watch it, Cabrian Hayes.
And such a terrible and sad year for the Pirates once again. I mean, last year you look at it, and at the end of the season, you had hopes of Brian Reynolds, who had batted really well all season. This year, it's Cabrian Hayes. And Cabrian Hayes has come up and just been low-key dominant. Like, no one has really talked about him.
You could say he's been everything we hoped for, and then some.
I mean, he was the NL Rookie of the Month last month. The dude, in all his games that he's played, which were about, 30, Austin, there was four games that he didn't have a hit. Only four games that he could have had a hitting streak for 30 straight games.
I believe he played 24 games, but still, he was just phenomenal
to come
in those
up
24
to
games.
To come up and to be able to bat like that, you know, is insane. And then finishing the... what I think is finishing the year with 5 homers, 11 RBIs.
He hit like 375, you know.
376. I mean, man, is that a bright spot at the hot corner?
Yeah, and he is the bright spot, along with whatever you get out of the pitching set. The bullpen at times looks good. JT Brubaker looks really good. Mitch Keller threw like 11 no-hit innings, even though he walked like 11 guys in the process.
Hey, but still, no-hitter.
Yeah, no-hitter. I pointed that out to Jason Mackey. He said, Mitch, he tweeted at one point, Mitch Keller has walked like 5 guys. And I responded, he still has a no-hitter, Jason. And Jason Mackey responded, that is correct, or something to the effect.
You are correct.
He said, that is accurate. It was accurate. But, you know, I don't know. I really do think that with a pitching staff, you could look at, you know, JT Brubaker looked really good. Mitch Keller, Brubaker, and a bullpen of maybe healthy guys. Will Nick Birdie ever be healthy? That's yet to be seen. Blake Cederlund looks really good. He's striking out everybody. And I think you got to give Ben Cherington some time. They're starting to reshuffle the minor league departments. Larry Broadway, who used to be the overseer of all the minor leagues, is no longer in that role. He has been reallocated to another spot in the organization. So I think Cherington is starting to get a better feel for what the Pirates have in the minor leagues. And I think it's a very positive thing looking at it right now.
Yeah, you still have a long way, but I mean, for Hayes to come up, and then we saw some digression in some players in like Bell and Reynolds, but if they can get back to a little bit of a form and, you know, a full season, and they're not going to make the playoffs for the next, you know, 3 years, but to build up like a typical rebuilding team, Cabrian Hayes is that first piece, and if there's another person that needs to step up on this roster right now, is your man that you claim to be the face of the franchise in the future, Cole Tucker.
Cole Tucker, yeah. Well, that was, you know.
Derek Shelton still sort of has him listed as an infielder. He was just like
he said that he's an infielder. They still see him as an infielder in the future. I see Cole Tucker as a future face of the franchise because of his personality. And I'm hoping that the bat will play. And at the moment, it's just not, which is concerning, because where are you going to play him if he can't hit?
Because that we have, as you all know, I mean, the Pirates have drafted plenty of infielders over the past couple of years. It's a crowded infield now.
He might end up being just a super utility guy.
Could you throw him in the outfield, center field?
Which isn't bad for him to be a super utility guy. If you can mold him into that way, like, you know, Josh Harrison or how Adam Frazier sort of is right now, and shift him around, not a bad thing. But
I mean, it's a valuable piece, but not...
There's talent around the infield that will be coming up in the next 2-3 years. There's talent coming up in general throughout this roster, you know, in the upcoming years.
It's now time for the irrelevant fact of the day as we wrap up this segment. Today's irrelevant fact of the day is about the Cincinnati Reds. Oh, the Reds, you know. They made the playoffs. Congratulations, Cincinnati. Well, they played the Atlanta Braves, and, well, they played a lot of innings. They scored no runs.
None.
The Reds have not scored a run. And the irrelevant fact of this is they're the first team ever in a wild card series series or playoff series that's not just not the one game wild card to never score a run in the series.
No.
They have not scored a run since the 2013 wild card game.
And who did they play?
The Pirates in Pittsburgh, the 2013 wild card game.
I mean, how Reds can it get? A team that actually has plenty of promise, great pitching, just the bats
some
go silent.
Some pretty good hitting throughout the year, too.
With the likes of Aristides Aquino and Eugenio Suarez, Moustakas, and all
Jesse
those guys.
Winker, Jesse Votto, Winker, Votto, veteran bat up.
Veteran
up
bat,
lineup.
The bat, they just go silent.
Yes, they do. It's now time for our new favorite segment of the day.
The mystery caller?
Today, the mystery caller. Before the mystery caller announces his or her name, I want you to first guess Andrew and Nate.
His or her.
Who
man.
Do you,
can we get a hint?
Who is it Muffin?
Think the mystery caller. Muffin.
Do we get a hint?
It is not Muffin. You do not get a hint.
Is it Ziggy?
No. Nate.
Oh, that was a good guess.
Who do you think?
It's your mom.
It's my mom.
Because you said him or her, so it's your mom.
Well, that's not the girl that I would imagine that would have been said in this conversation, but mystery caller, state your name.
Hello, guys. It's Jeremy.
Jeremy!
Oh, my God.
Jeremy, thanks for coming on and joining us.
Mr. Jaysky.
Thanks for having me, man.
So,
dude,
Jeremy.
Did you just wake up, dude?
They want to know if you just woke up.
Woke up like an hour ago, actually.
Back-to-back weeks when the guys just rolled out of bed on
the
mystery
last
caller.
Week, the first mystery caller that we had, Joey Shields, had just awoken from his sleep.
His slumber.
So, Jeremy, what would you like to talk about here on Baldwin and the Berg with us?
So, I would like to ask you guys about Thursday night football. So, this year has been kind of odd for Thursday night football. I mean, the first week was pretty good with the Chiefs and the Texans. But the last 3 weeks have been kind of odd with, you know, the Bengals and the Browns and the Dolphins and the Jags. And this week being the Broncos and the Jets. I just want to hear your opinion on the Thursday night football games.
I mean, I actually have talked to us about this with, like, a couple other of my buddies. I mean, when's the last time you've heard of a good Thursday night football game?
The Steelers and Ravens on Thanksgiving this year.
I'm talking about it. I mean, there's like maybe one or two games every year, good games every year. But, like, other than that, I mean, it's just crappy teams going at or just like mediocre games with no matter and that end up playing.
Yeah, Nate.
Well, also, I think Thursday night football, you usually try to rotate through who gets to play. So, I mean, you're going to have those odd matchups. I mean, it's not set in stone that, like, you're going to put the best teams in there every week. And that's why you ended up with the Broncos Jets game this week. So,
what I think it is they try to stack Thursday night as, I guess, rivalry in division games is kind of what it looks like. That's why you see a lot of Browns Bengals and you see Miami Dolphins play the Jets
or the Jaguars.
Bad matchup game. And I also think that they're trying to make Monday Night Football relevant again, because it really hasn't been for the last couple of years. It's why they keep changing broadcasters. I think that's part of it, but Thursday night's not great. And I definitely think that having higher quality teams, which it looks like later on in the season is a possibility, will kind of improve Thursday night football.
But also in the past, I mean, it was their Color Rush event. So every team has the chance to play. They schedule every team to play on Thursday night football. That's why you have these matchups that you do.
Jeremy, I want to ask you about the Chargers, the San Diego Chargers, I still refer to them as, but they're in L.A., Justin Herbert, what do you make of your guy, Justin Herbert, so far going into week four?
So I think Herbert, he's a good quarterback. I mean, come on, first-round pick out of Oregon. Like, he got the potential. But I'm going to go and I have to agree with Coach Lynn, and I think Tyrod Taylor should have the job because he did get us the win in week one. And we've seen what Tyrod Taylor can do with his former team, so I have faith in Tyrod.
I mean, I agree. I think Herbert's still a little raw, even though he performed so well the first game. I think people are going to start to get film on him, and then they might begin to pick him apart. I mean, you don't want his confidence to stroke, because I also like Herbert. I mean, I picked him up. I drafted him in fantasy, but I knew he would never kind of start. But I mean, it was still kind of a good pick. But I do like Tyrod's a solid quarterback. I mean, people forget he led Buffalo to the playoffs. I mean, fun fact.
He played for the Browns,
and then he got replaced by Baker Mayfield. And then, played
and
for
then
the
he
got his lung punctured.
Got his lung punctured by the but San Diego coaching staff, LA coaching staff.
Yeah, but he's still a good quarterback nonetheless, and I think he can still lead this team to victory while he teaches and shows Herbert's the ropes of being an NFL quarterback.
Jeremy, one more thing. What do you think of the Steelers game being postponed with the Titans because of coronavirus? Now, two more Titans have come down with the virus as of today.
So, I'm in agreement with postponing the game. I mean, for the safety of the players. So, I mean, I can't really be too upset about it. I'm not even a Steelers fan, but, you know.
Big Charger fan, Jeremy.
Fake fan.
Yes, I am.
Fake Charger fan.
Quick question for you guys. Do you think the postponing of this game will actually affect the true outcome of what this game would have been?
Ooh, that's a good question.
You know, to be honest, not necessarily.
No, I don't think so.
I know both teams are 3-0 right now, but later in the season, I still feel like for some reason the Steelers have an edge in this game, and I think the defense would have stepped. The defense is either way is going to step up, you know, to perform at a high level and stop Derrick Henry. I don't know. I just feel like the Steelers, for some reason, have that edge on the Titans, either way, whenever they play them.
I don't know. I mean, the game would have came down as simply as this. Does the Steelers' defense stop Derrick Henry? And I just don't – I mean, very few people have been able to stop Derrick Henry. I can't name many people that have. Even when his quote-unquote bad games that he has this year, he rushes for like 80 yards, 100 yards.
And so far, the Steelers' defense, first in the league – and rush yards allowed with only 66.5 per game.
It's a shame. It was a matchup I was actually really looking forward to watch.
And also,
we're still gonna get it.
And also, I know we're still gonna get it, but I was looking forward to it this week. Like, wow, like you got the big bruising back of Derrick Henry versus the quick, speedy, athletic linebackers of the Steelers.
And also, you look at talk about quick and speedy athletic linebackers. But the Steelers have already faced, you know, a pretty solid running back, one of the better ones in the league, and Saquon Barkley in week one. And they, you know, they stifled him, and they didn't really let him get anything.
I feel so bad for that dude.
And now he's out.
And now he's out.
Saquon.
Good night to all the fantasy teams that picked him.
Good night. The only thing that really concerns me in terms of the Steelers game this week, at least what would have been, is just the fact that there's no bye week going into the rest of the season. But as we mentioned earlier, that really hasn't affected a lot of Steelers teams before. Really just no true bye week. I guess technically this is the bye.
When was our original bye week?
I believe it was week 7.
Okay, I mean, it's not that big of a gap. I mean 4 weeks, but like...
What? It was supposed to be Tennessee week 4, the Eagles week 5, week 6 against Baltimore, then a bye before Dallas. So...
It's going to have to go straight through.
Jeremy, I think that looking at it, it kind of gives the Steelers maybe a little bit more time to prepare for Tennessee, but you know, obviously the focus now shifts to the Eagles. So I don't know, it's kind of hard to look at it. It's kind of just unexpected, and I think that the Steelers I think they're more upset and disappointed that there will be no bye, and that they worked half the week when it ends up being their week off. You know, it's like when you have a week, you're supposed to have a week off of RMU Focus when Galdarisi is the producer for me. And Galdarisi never gave me my week off, and you expected the week off, but you never got it. That's kind of how the Steelers feel right now. So,
good comparison.
Yeah, thank you, Gulbash. Jeremy, anything else before we let you go?
No, I just want to thank you guys for having me. It's fun.
You're welcome, JC. Jaysky.
Thanks Black for coming
Bears,
on.
Black Bears for life.
Oh, do you want to preview Sunday's big Baldwin wiffle ball matchup, fall league matchup?
Oh, boy.
We have a lot of players that have expressed an interest. Mason Hoyick, Luke Couture, Meadville, me, you, Nick Woods. We have a lot of people that might be showing up to Baldwin Wiffle Ball's
bunch of big bats.
Fall league scrimmage, if you will.
Yeah, it's going to be a good one, man.
All right, Jeremy, thanks for joining us on Baldwin the Berg today.
Yep, thank you.
Thanks, Jeremy.
Appreciate it.
Yep, bye.
Penn State sucks.
Okay, that wasn't needed. Well, what did you guys think of today's mystery caller?
It was a whole lot better than Joey's.
Better than Joey?
Well,
yeah, Jeremy came
bigger,
prepared with questions.
He came prepared with questions. That was a lot better than what Shields did.
Poor surprise.
It was a lot better.
Shields. Hey, we relied on Shields, though.
We love you, Joey.
Everybody liked the questions that Jeremy... Everybody was surprised by Jeremy. I think you guys were thrown off by the he or she.
You came in with that.
I thought it was 100% going to be Ziggy. I thought Ziggy's going to be one of these.
Ziggy's going to be one of these.
He's going to be one of them.
He has not said anything about coming on yet. No, I haven't asked him.
When does Govash get a mystery caller of the youngins?
Of
all his youngins.
Oh, should I? That's my segment.
When are you gonna, Nate, are you gonna have a caller? A mystery caller?
No.
No. I run the mystery callers.
I am the mystery caller.
No, you are not the mystery caller. So we want to thank Jeremy Novakowski for coming on and being this week's mystery caller. Last week was Joey Shields. This week is Jeremy. I might have to start a list of the mystery caller people. But
are you going to start quizzing us?
Yeah, I'll quiz you.
Who is the mystery caller in week one?
On day 25, we'll do the Big Brother. It'll be like Big Brother competitions. On day 25 of the RMU radio season, who was the mystery caller? Jeremy Novakowski. Today's day 25, maybe. I don't know. Okay.
Today is October 2nd.
Let's run into some predictions. Let's run into some predictions now. I know. And we've been here for like 25 days, school days.
Oh, I thought you meant as in like November 25th.
No, no. Okay. No, not what I meant. Okay. Predictions. Can't predict the Steeler game because that's not happening. What's going on in the world of Pitt, Nate?
Am I giving predictions here?
Yeah.
All right, so last week, you know, somehow made it past Louisville. Three interceptions.
Where Austin was right.
Three interceptions, seven sacks. This team has been getting in the backfield a heck of a lot. And this team, I think this defense has proven elite. That they are one of the best in the nation. And I think they're better than they were originally advertised. But coming into this game, they take on NC State. They're 1-1, led by Dave Doran, head coach. But there's nothing appealing about NC State. I think Pitt runs through this one relatively easy, and I think this is their game. They finally get the offense to start showing their true strides, and I think they win 35-17.
I agree. I mean, the NC State, I mean, they're okay, but I mean, that defense is just going to eat them alive. And I think I'm going to go with Nate. I think it's going to be an absolute smoke show by the score of 35-14.
Yeah, I think Pitt comes out with it. I think it's going to be a little closer. I think it's going to be 24-17, one of those Pitt games that really shouldn't be close, but really is.
It's what you're gonna. You always say it. They have one of those games every year where they give you hope, and then they're just gonna.
It's
flop.
Like the Steelers losing to bad teams like Tampa Bay a couple years ago.
Oh my God, I remember that.
NBA Finals, Lakers Heat. Who wins and how many games?
Lakers at 5, and the Lakers win tonight by a score of 118-106.
I think with the injuries coming from the Heat, I don't even give the Heat a chance at this point anymore. I think four straight for the Lakers.
You hate
LeBron
to see it.
And AD are just way too dominant. There's no answer for them in the Heat for the Heat.
No one's had
to
an
control
answer.
Them.
To be fair, no one's had an answer for them all postseason.
I mean, you might get some early scoring from the Heat, but I think just throughout the course of a game, LA is going to be able to just dominate.
I'm sticking with Lakers in six. That's what I originally predicted. I still think the Heat get a game, maybe two.
I think the gentlemen sweep them.
Yeah. Finally, in predictions, tonight is week two of Austin's bowling league. How do you think that I will bowl tonight?
I think you're
50
in three games. There's three games, so you need three score predictions. Two weeks ago, I bowled a 113 in the first game. I was really bad. Then I came back with a 153 and a 148.
All right. Wait, hold on.
I know the max bowling is what, 300?
Yes, I'm not bowling that.
Well, obviously, I know.
How do you expect to compete against Goldberg when you can't even go over 150 when Goldberg's bowling like a 280?
Well, Goldberg had one good day where the ball magically floated down the lane for him, probably.
Okay,
I don't know.
I say Austin starts slow again.
Okay.
Maybe even worse with like 100 into the 90s, maybe.
What do you think I do?
100 to the 90s.
100 to the 90s?
Whoa,
okay.
Low end.
Maybe, but then he's like, you know what? I got to pick it up.
Okay.
And then he picks it up, and you bowl a 140.
Okay.
And then to end on a high note, you heat up and bowl a 160.
Ooh.
So you progressively get better as the game goes.
My highest score is ever is like a 165. So.
Wow.
We're thinking of a career day.
Yeah, we're talking almost career day. Nate, how do I do?
You're going to bowl an average of 100 through all three games.
Wow.
Wow. I'm
going with the low end theory.
You think I'm going to be that bad? Well, I hope you know that the scores...
Wait, are the rails up or not?
No, there are no bumpers. I hope you know that once the scores come in today, I'll be sending them into our little group chat that we have.
I hope I'm right. I wish I'm somewhat
I hope where Austin was right comes into play here. I will not be giving my own predictions on myself because I don't want to set myself up for failure.
But then that's where you lowball yourself. That you say, you know what? I think I'm not going to do well. I'm going to go in the 100s.
All right, let's do shout out to Kolvash.
All right. I would like to shout out my mom, who finally knows that the show is today.
Oh, wow.
I finally
told her. It's only the second week, though.
Yeah, that's a good point. I keep forgetting to tell people, too.
It's only week two, but I love you, mother. Thank you very much. I'd also like to say shout out to Alex, who's probably in school right now. But he's probably just online, or he's just completely not.
He probably doesn't even know what day
it is. Hey, don't forget they had Highlander Day on Wednesday.
Oh, I can't forget the new Highlander.
Highlander Day. It's basically
you know who it is?
The new Highlander, the new Highlander mascot.
But yeah, I mean, shout out, he's my bro.
We're close.
Shout out my dad who gives me a lot of my hot takes, and hopefully I'll see you guys in about like 2 hours.
Yeah, Dylan's a cool guy.
Wow. All right. I would like to shout out my mom and grandma. Hopefully they were listening. Thanks again for listening on a weekly basis. And then shout out to Devin who's tuning in today.
Devin
this year. I forgot to tell him what time it started last week, and he texted me at like 11 o'clock and was like, hey, when's your show happening? I said, it already happened.
Nice. Oh. I want to shout out my parents, obviously. I want to shout out to John Ziegler. He was listening today.
Can you shout out Muffin?
Thank you, John Ziegler. Thank you, Muffin, for always just being you. No matter what side you stand on it, I want to wish the best to President Trump and Melania to come down with the coronavirus. I hope it doesn't matter what side you're on. Really should just wish and hope for the best for them. And I want to give a shout out to Jeremy Novikowski for coming on this week as the mystery caller.
J-Ski himself.
I want to say thank you to Joey Shields for coming on last week.
For sleeping.
And like I said last week, I want anybody that may be listening that did not tell me that they are listening. You may know who you are and you may not. I want to thank you as well. Do we have an ending song for today, Golvash?
Oh, I didn't.
We do not. Well.
We do not. Well, I didn't.
Well, here we are.
I was unaware.
No ending song. So we'll wrap it up with Golvash looking for a song. And as he looks for a song, we want to say thank you for joining us on week two of Baldwin and the Berg on this October 2nd. Do you know what the song should be? You know what, Golvash?
Are you
going to
do it? Are you
going to
do it? Are you going to do it?
Yeah, I have the
song.
He's
going to do it.
Today, you're going to look it up on YouTube
today,
and there's just going
to
be an ad.
No, today is October 2nd. So you know what song has to play.
Are you going
to
do it?
I knew it. Today is October 2nd. Golvash, you know what that means? We were supposed to wake you up at like 12:01 on October 1st.
You didn't do it.
I did not because you were awake.
I was supposed to. If you would have told me to fake close my eyes, I would have done it. For video purposes.
September has ended. It is now October 2nd.
It is now spooky season.
We are moving along in the school year. We're halfway through. This is the end of week 5. Online week 13 and 14 and finals week 15. It is going very fast. Thank you so much for telling me that, Green Day. So this is the show. I'm Austin Bechtold.
Thank you, Green Day.
I'm Nathan Breisinger.
And I'm Andrew Golvash.
Fun, entertaining show today. We want to thank you, and we'll see you soon next week.